Blog Talk Radio.
What it's all about. Good afternoon, good evening, and God bless. Welcome to Tribe Family Channel's Love, Lust, Lovers, Late Night Literature, going strong all spring long. I am the host, Beverly Black, and the creator of Tribe Family Channel's Literary Festival 2, and tonight's guest is Joy Lynn Ross. Before I bring on Joy Lynn, let me just tell you a little bit about our special guest. Blessed selling author E.N. Joy is the author behind the New Day Divas series, which has been coined a soap opera in print. She is an Essence magazine best-selling author who wrote secular books under the names Joy Lynn M. Jostle and Joy. After 13 years of being a paralegal in the insurance industry, E.N. Joy divorced her career and married her mistress and her passion, writing. In 2000, she formed her own publishing company where she published books under landing a book deal with St. Martin's Press. After being the first content development editor for Triple Crown Publications and 10 years as the acquisitions editor for Carl Weber's Urban Christian imprint, E.N. Joy now does freelance editing, ghostwriting, writing behind literary consulting. She has clients, which included the New York Times bestselling authors, entertainers, and aspiring authors, as well as first-time authors. Some notable literary consulting clients include actor Christian Keys, singer Olivia Longott, and reality television star Cherie M. Whitfield of Real Housewives of Atlanta. So without further ado, let me introduce to you Joy Lynn. Hi, Joy Lynn. How are you?
Hi, I am wonderful. I'm wonderful. I'm here in Ohio where it's storming, just pouring down raining.
Oh, my goodness gracious. Wow. So are you out of the weather? Are you indoors? Seems like I can hear something. So did we catch you in between the storm?
Well, actually, my sister girlfriend had a surgery today that went a little bit longer. So sometimes you have to just put things on pause. So I said, you know what, I got to lay eyes on my sister girlfriend, take her a meal, make sure she's okay. And if I have to start this call en route, so be it. But sometimes we got to put pause on life for the people we love. So I am en route, but I did not want to not make this call because I've been waiting to speak with you. I've been so excited.
I'm excited. And you are absolutely right. So first and foremost, we want to extend our prayers of healing and comfort and strength for your sister girl and you out there in that rain, travel mercies, being an angel and being Joy like your name. And so we really appreciate that you are a true friend to your friend and want you to be careful as you're driving and talking with us. And I want to thank you for being here. You know what? This is so like long overdue. How many years have we been acquainted?
I think it was back when I self-published my very first book, Please Tell Me If the Grass Is Greener, which was back in 1998. So I know it was shortly thereafter.
Wow. It was around 1999 when embarked with I would say the Yahoo group, and you know, because we didn't have social media, but we had the Yahoo groups. We were all in Black Writers United and the Black Expressions group, Donna Hills Divas Incorporated. I'm sorry, and then I had Heavy Divas by Design.
Yes,
that was a long time ago, girlfriend. You know, I'm so honored to be able to talk to you.
I wasn't going to miss this. I was not going to miss this, but I'm in my subdivision now, so I'm about to be home nice and safe. But there was no way I was going to have dead air, and you wondering where I was at.
Well, you know what? I said, we'll just let the music play, and I'm glad everything worked out the way it did. You know, you keep us posted about your girlfriend, you know, those prayers coming up as she gets her strength back and gets back to her queendom. And I'm glad that you have arrived safe at your queendom. So when you get some of those books in front of you, we'll have you read. But for right now, we'll let our listeners hear about where did Joy Lynn Ross first find herself on earth? Where were you born, and what was your young childhood like?
Well, I was born right here in Ohio. I'm born and raised Buckeye. And as far as my writing career, it kind of intertwines with my childhood. You know, everybody did live the perfect life, and it don't matter where you at now. It's always about where you came from, and where I came from was the hood. And a lot went on in the hood. Need I say, when you have a mother and a father who's addicted to heroin, you know, you see it on television where your house is the party house, where you walk into the bathroom to go use the bathroom and somebody with a rubber band around their arm shooting up needles. So that was my childhood. That's where I lived. Grew up in an abusive home. And so you have to understand how my escape wasn't drugs. My escape wasn't alcohol. My escape was the pen. I could create my own world with a pen. I could write. I mean, you have the power of the power of the pen. You can rule the world, so to speak. So when I learned that I could rule the world with my pen, you know how you do them elementary journal writings?
Right.
I lived in the hood. We didn't do spring break. We didn't have nothing to write about when we came back from spring break. I ain't go nowhere.
Okay, God, I want to know what we did over the summer. parade up and down in the streets, you know, with the boys and the girls, and had to be home before that street light came on, and, you know, hope to have some money for the ice cream truck, just that regular old, we didn't take those vacations and this and that and the other, that, you know, they want us to come writing about like we went on the other side of the world. I grew up in the hood too, Joylynn, so I appreciate your transparency, and you know, all that means is that I'm going to have you come to our show, The Woman at the Well, because that is a testimony of being able to overcome an environment that had nothing to do with your being able to be the successful woman that you are today. Now, I'm an 8-year crack addict. Now I'm 24 years crack free, so I want to salute you. Me having been on drugs, I want to salute you as the offspring of someone that came through an era where, you know, they may have been on that front line. I was on the front line of crack, didn't have nowhere to go for help. Okay, now, so I want to salute your strength coming through a time when you didn't have anywhere to go for help, but you found that pen that was a mental stimulant for you to escape and find yourself in another world. So tell me about school. Were you like a good student at school? Did you write in school? Were the teachers aware of, you know, your love for literature when you were growing up in school?
Well, like I said, you know, my escape was the pen. So when we had to do them journals, you know, I made up stuff. I went to Florida. I went to Disney World. I went to Disneyland. And it sounds so real, the teachers believed it. I mean, they believed it enough where, you know, how the best journal entry gets to stand up in front of the class and read. I was reading that nonsense made up. To the point where I wasn't believing it.
You had fiction literary stuff going on in elementary school, basically.
Right. And so it was just one of those things where if my classmates, you know, when they run into me today or they see my post on Facebook, no one's surprised that I'm an author. You know, it's just one of those things where you lived it and you breathed it. It was your everything. When people know your passion by everything you do, by everything you say, and it just doesn't surprise them when you turn out doing a certain thing in life, that I breathed, I slept. And then when I met Maya Angelou as well when I was in high school, I just knew that was going to be me. That's what I wanted to do. I wanted to share my thoughts, poetry, stories with the world.
Wow. That is wonderful. So meeting Maya Angelou in high school, tell us about that experience, where you were, what it was, and all of that, because we need to know.
Well, I was actually, I was with an organization called I Know I Can here in Columbus, Ohio, and it was an organization that, you know, kind of helped kids who really don't think that they can even have the possibility of going to college, let them know that it is a reality. They provide grants and help you with financial aid and filling out all of those applications that are working, trying to do your taxes. And so it was through that organization where once they came into the classroom, introduced who they were, and it's so funny, I'll never forget the lady's name. The counselor's name was Joanne Davis, and she came into my English literary class. And she said, I just have a quick announcement. For those of you who intend on going to college, you can come to this side of the room. For those of you who aren't going to college, you can go to the other side of the room. I won't even waste your time. Well, I went to the side of the room where I wasn't thinking about college. College just, you know, it never crossed my mind. I could, you know, barely find something to eat in the house, let alone find some money to scrape up to go to somebody's college. So even though I was on the other side of the room, I heard everything she said, and it was like God magnified it. And that's when I knew that it was a possibility. It didn't matter that I was from the hood living in the ghetto. Every one of us in that class had the same choice and the same opportunity. It was all about which side room you wanted to go on, which side of that room you wanted to be on, which side of the tracks you wanted to end up on, what choices you wanted to make in life. So right then and there, that is when I made the decision, you know what, I can do this. I can at least try. You know, we at least try something we can't do. Now, I can't do everything, and I even know the scripture, we can do all things through Christ who strengthens us, but some stuff I just, you know.
Amen. Now, come on.
I can do it with Jesus. I can do it
with
Jesus.
But you know what? I sure appreciate that. I sure appreciate that because I wrote way back when we probably came, you know, together in the literary world is when I wrote this quote. You can't do everything in one day, but you can do something every day. And you were like, I can at least try today, you know? And so you tried to do that, which what was it that you went on to do? When you were saying you could at least try, you didn't want to, you could, you know, you could hear, you were in range of her voice, even though you were on the other side of the room. So what was the next steps? What did that propel you to trying?
So that's when I started. I said, you know what, this is free. It can't hurt. Let me hear what she said. So I went to the office where she said the applications will be. I got the applications. I started the process. And that when I knew, you know, I can do this and I'm going to do this. Even if I don't end up with a dime, just getting accepted, just knowing that I could have, that I did everything possible, everything necessary, because I have this saying, there's a fine line between doing the best that you can do and doing all that you can do. When I fail at something or when I don't achieve something, when I know that I did everything that I can do, there's some satisfaction within me. I'm satisfied with that failure. I'm satisfied with that accomplishment or achievement because I did everything I could do, so therefore it wasn't meant to be.
I appreciate that right now. Yes, I appreciate that right now. You have no idea. And so whatever's not happening wasn't meant to be. If you gave it everything that you had, you can sleep with the satisfaction of knowing and resting well that it's the way it's supposed to be.
Amen. Amen. It's so that I hate that I had to go all the way back and get that along, but I just had to let you know the importance. And it was just so many little nuggets within that. But it was through that organization, I Know I Can, where I got the opportunity to meet Maya Angelou because, you know, I just stood out in my perseverance and I was the first one in my family to go to college. And, you know, sometimes we got to clarify, a lot of folks went to college, but not everybody graduated from college.
Come on now. You know what? Come on now. Because I went, and a lot of us went to college and didn't attend, okay? Now, that's another story, okay? I went, but I didn't attend. Okay, now that's another story. So, yes, you definitely have to say that. And congratulations, you know, you're growing up out of the concrete and it is not pretty and you dang going straight. You better let the world know and break it down into all the nuggets. We have plenty of time so you can break it down to every common denominator and nugget and skin tiller that you need to let our audience know what you went through to get where you are today because it hasn't been easy. So you coming up basically raising yourself because the adults were doing their thing. Like I said, my background, I've been around houses, you know, I've been in the crack houses where, you know, I mean, same difference, okay? So they have kids, they're trying to get, you know, off, you know, I mean, it's just rough. So the kids growing up in one layer of life and adults are in another layer of life, same house, different layers, a whole nother world. So in your world, you're finding an escape through the pen and the literary world in which you are embarking upon. You fill out the application so that you can, you know, it can't hurt. And so what college did you ultimately attend?
I started going to a community college. And then from there, you know, you could shoot for the stars, but let's start off with the little, you know, with our little coins. Let's go on and spend on little coins at community college. You know, when you're talking $500 per credit hour versus $5,000 per credit hour.
Good, thank you.
And let me take what I can at the community college.
Right. Come on now.
Right, so let me take what I can at the community college, and then after I did my 2 years at the community college, I graduated with my associate's in legal assisting, and from there I ended up going to a private university here in Columbus, Ohio, called Capital University. It's actually in Bexley, a suburb. But let me be real with y'all. Let me go on and tell the truth and shame the devil. I went on these grants and financial aid, and I got scholarships. And
that last semester,
I did the ultimate no-no, got caught up with a man and dropped out. Yes, I hate to admit it, but like I said, I'm going to tell you before the devil tell you. So,
I heard that. That's what makes you the best-selling author, okay, because she shames the devil, okay? Y'all can't even, he couldn't rise up to try to tell it if he wanted to. So you did what was in your path. Because it's already written. We're just walking out the steps. And so we've all gotten on and off of our pattern, path, and purpose. And so you went as far as you went, and then a relationship ensued. And so go on from there, wherever you want to go.
I got caught up, dropped out. When I say the last semester, I mean the last semester. I mean, I'm 2 weeks into the last semester. I'm talking about the light at the end of the tunnel is blinding me. I was right there. And just got caught up in the man.
Mm-hmm.
Everybody's worst nightmare for their daughter who goes off to college. But I did go back.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
It took me a year. But I got it together, went back. But let me tell you, I lost
Look, you're
all my money.
About
I lost
a year
my scholarship.
But wait a minute, sis. You went back after a year, only a year, and you bounced back that fast? Come on now. That's
back
to be commendable.
Okay, maybe,
oh, that's
maybe
commendable.
A year and a half, but
that's still commendable. Come on now. There's people that don't go back for 5 and 10 years. Come on now. Let's keep it real. We're going to keep it real. You bounced back. Oh, my goodness, you bounced back. So it's not about what you lost. It's about what you gained, because there's experience. There's things that you knowledge that you learned from that experience, because just like you just threw it out there about, worst nightmare, your girl going off to college. Well, you know what? Guess what? Now you're able to mentor people in that area, because without the experience, you really can't tell a lot of people a whole lot of, anything, because they want to know where's your experience, where's your credentials. So you have the credentials of letting them know that you could come out of an environment, okay, that didn't have a promise of going to college, and you still got that application in there. You still went, and you proved it to yourself that you could go. And then when life threw you a curveball, guess what? You met a guy hit by that curveball, but you came back throwing curveballs, and you finished.
I sure did. I came back. You know, unfortunately, I lost all that money. I lost my scholarships and all that good stuff, so I had to take out a loan. And them loans will haunt you down. There ain't nothing you can do. You can file bankruptcy. You can go live in a shelter.
That loan ain't going nowhere. Girl, my loan finally got paid off with, after they garnished every, I had to give it to them this way, that way, hand over foot, and then let them take it out of taxes, okay?
Yes. Yes.
And so they finally, I have no student loans, but they do get their money, don't they?
Oh, they get that money. They get that money. And it was a private university, so I was paying some big money. But you know what? That's the price I had to pay for making the wrong decisions, So, I went back, and, I was proud of myself that I did go back, but there was a price to pay. And I can take that and share that, with my daughters or even your listeners,
Absolutely,
so,
absolutely. And speaking of our listeners, I see your lines holding, so we do know you're there. And we want to remind everyone that you are tuned in to Tribe Family Channel, Literary Festival 2, Love, Lust, Lovers, Late Night Literature, Going Strong All Spring Long. And our guest is Joy Lynn Ross, Blessed best-selling author of such a catalog. We're going to allow her to tell us what all her catalog is when we get to that point. But, you know, I just want to say a couple of things. You know, don't beat yourself up about, you know, like, okay, you may have taken a financial, you know, deficit on the side of the grants and the you know, awards to get through the first leg of your education. But that's also par for the course of the testimony that you have now, because even under those circumstances, someone could come to you and say, well, this, well, that, and you can say, well, no, because I this, and no, because I that, and you can still go on to this, this, and that, because I've done that. I know how to turn it around. And had you not gone through that to know how to turn it around, you wouldn't have that testimony or be able to mentor anyone, because nowadays we don't even want our kids taking on a college, you know, loan. And if they do, then let it be, like you said, such a stellar private situation that you don't mind because you've invested in yourself. And so you've given back what was poured into you. It was poured into you on this end of the spectrum by way of grants and awards to go, and life showed up. You had to box that down and get back on course. Now you went and out of your pocket got yourself, you know, through it, and that's to be commended. So I want to commend you for that and just, you know, shift your outlook about how, you know, you look at that, because you came through it and that experience allows you to mentor someone else. You know, life is a zigzag road. And so you can't get your zig unless you got your zag. You messed with the wrong one, girl. So
you, that's right.
Yeah. So you finished school with your associates and you're paralegal. And I used to have fun working in with lawyers. I've worked with in law offices in Palo Alto, California, some of the top lawyers in Silicon Valley by Stanford. And it's fun, and then it has its, you know, everything has its flip side. So did you enjoy working in that area?
Oh, I did. So once I, you know, I did, like I said, I went back to the college, ended up having to pay out of my pocket, take out student loans, but I did end up graduating with my bachelor's in legal administration. So from there, I did work under attorneys. I loved it. It's like you said, we do all the dirty work. You know, when you're in a position of, you know, paralegal, legal assistant, you do a lot of the dirty work.
Come on now, just grab that file and go.
Yeah, but I loved it. I loved it because I was always torn between law and writing. I really, really had a passion for law, for the legal field, and for writing. I took my LSAT, I registered for law school, got all my letters of recommendation. I remember my grandmother going to tour in law school with me. And then it came down to, if I go to school for law, when in the world am I going to be able to write? You know, now they do it. All kind of lawyers are writing books. But back then, you know, I just couldn't figure out, how am I going to write and do this something that I'm so passionate about? I'd be writing in law school, but it'd be a whole different kind of writing, a whole different kind of researching. And so I just said, God, you have to help me make this decision. Well, my decision came in the form of a pink slip. My job I was working for as a legal assistant, after working there for 10 years, because I had worked for another lawyer for 3 years prior to that. So after working there, I ended up getting the pink slip. So I said, you know what? I took my severance package, I took my 401k, and I self-published my very first book. And I said, if this thing don't work, I'm going to law school. Well, this thing worked.
Wow.
So here I am. Here I am. But I always tell myself, when I turn 80, I'm going back to law school.
Wow. What a journey. What a journey. That is awesome. That is awesome. And, you know, back in, you know, the days of, you know, going to college and aspiring, the mindset wasn't
that you could do both things, just to, you know, go back to, you know, how the landscape is laid out in society or was laid out for us. You know, growing up, you either went to college or you were, you know, doing something else, but it wasn't that you did both. You went to college so that you could work the 9 to 5. So it's understandable when you say, well, you know, I didn't think about, you know, being able to write and be a practicing attorney, because, you know, the mindset and the landscape didn't give room for that. You would either be an attorney or you would be an author, is what society would dictate. And so, you know, a lot of our decisions were predicated upon the landscape of, you know, the layout of the land. And so it's understandable mm-hmm. to not be able to make that determination to see where you could have that balance then, like we can now. Now, you best believe we can do all things and better get out of our way while we're doing it, right?
Yeah, I mean, and not to mention, you know, I got pregnant when I was 15, you know.
Okay.
And, yeah, and I had my son by the time I was 16, so nothing I did was ever going to be normal, typical. I wasn't the, you know, typical college kid on the campus,
right,
hanging out, hanging around. I went to school on some Sundays at 6 o'clock in the evening. I mean, I had to do what I had to do. They had what they would call adult degree programs. So
uh-huh.
even though I was a young woman, I had a child. So I was taking courses
mm-hmm.
with the older adults, because that
right.
my schedule with trying to be a mom didn't allow for me to be that, you know, typical student. I mean,
right.
I got accepted to the Ohio State University, but I could
wow.
not attend as badly as I wanted to. And I could see
mm-hmm.
myself on that campus. I had a child,
mm-hmm.
and I knew
mm-hmm.
that wasn't going to fit what I was
mm-hmm.
doing. Going to school full time,
wow.
and I was working, and I was taking care of a child. So
mm-hmm.
I had to do what I had to do, you know,
wow.
in order to make it happen. Yeah.
Right.
So.
Indeed, indeed. And, you know, you keep saying Ohio, and we just had William Diamond, I can't think of his last name, from the Ohio Players, the drummer from the Ohio Players on our show last week, James Diamond Williams, that's his name, of the
yeah.
Ohio Players. He was just on Tri-Family Channel on April 1st. So you can look on Everybody is a Star 2016 Tri-Family Channel, and one of Ohio's own is there. So you did what you had to do, sister, and I commend you for that. That is one thing I can say, is that the vicissitudes of life did not spare you, and you know what? You are no joke. You are definitely a true trooper and survivor. You know, you carved out your own lane. So, you know, because here you were, you know, it's hard growing up, and then your young mom, and, you know, so like I said, those zigzag steps in life, you know, with our journey,
mm.
nothing's, you know, our steps are ordered, but, I mean, we don't know what's coming, you know, and so you certainly dealt with everything that was handed to you and the cards that were dealt to you, because, you know, who can predict life? And so I commend you for that. Every time you say that, you know, you had this struggle or that struggle, it's like, wow, and here you are stepping up to it. And so you're a young mom, you finish school, you finish school, and then you go to private school, finish that paralegal pink slip, and this is not, you know, you're not knowing, right? But, and I love it when doors close, because I know that there's another one opening. And so the door closed, and you aren't seeing this as the opening to the literary world that you're about to embark on, or how are you viewing it?
I'm viewing it as an opening, because I said, God, yeah, I'm going to do this, and I mean, I didn't have no choice. I took everything and still had to borrow some money. Had to borrow from my grandparents, had to borrow from my now husband, then boyfriend, to get this done. And so I said, if this doesn't work, you know, it doesn't work, I'll go ahead and I'll do law school if the book thing doesn't work. But it goes back to when we started this conversation, I had to try. I at least had to try, even if it doesn't work, you know, just to know. I don't want to live life with what ifs and maybes and regrets. I can't. It's too short.
It's come on now, I'm scared of what might not, you know, if I don't try, that would haunt me, okay,
yes.
That I didn't try, could have did it and didn't try and had the capability of going after it. That's, to me, that's like, you know what, you could have went fishing, but you didn't want to bait the hook, didn't want to cast out your line, and didn't want to reel nothing in. And so you don't have nothing because you didn't want to go fishing for it. And I'm not her. I got to go get it.
Absolutely. And I know I'm going to lose some parents with this one. But with my children, I let them know failure is an option. Failure is an option. You have to give your children that option to fail, or they'll stop trying. They'll stop doing everything.
Come on now.
Mom and dad. Failure has to be an option in life. So everybody who does, failure is not an option. You better watch it. You have to give your children options.
I know this
might seem far-fetched from what I'm saying, but I remember watching a television show, and this woman's son had died because he drove drunk. And the host asked her, you seem to have a lot of guilt about that. Explain that. Share us. And she said, I didn't give him any other options. She said, well, what do you mean? She said, I told him, don't do this. And I would always tell him, don't do this. And I didn't give him an option. But if you do this, call me. Don't give
me. Wow, you better come on and say that. You better say that. You know, someone once told me as well that they had recommended this book, How to Behave So Your Kids Do. And she also admonished, you know, that you have to give them choices. So try giving them, say, if someone's not, you know, cleaning up their room or something, you know, well, you give them options. Okay, well, do you want to lose the TV or lose your telephone? Because, you know, then it's their choice. Because, one, you have to do what you have to do, clean your room and care for yourself. Nobody's going to give you a pass and say, no, you don't have to do that. But if you're not doing what you need to do and what you need to step up to, then we can give options. Okay, well, then the choice is yours as to which option you choose. And so I can understand, like you're saying, when it goes back to you're saying you might lose some parents by saying failure is an option. But guess what? And then we turn around and tell our same kids, nothing beats a failure but a try. Okay, so I'm with you. You absolutely right. Failure has to be an option, because how else are you going, if you learn how to ride a bike, you're going to have to fall before, you know, you get that bike straight and ride.
Yes.
And so failure has to be an option.
Yes,
so that makes perfect sense.
We scare our children into not wanting to try. We scare them into not wanting to try or do things. We have to give them. And like I said, it's not a series of the drunk driving, but don't you ever drive drunk. Don't you ever do it. But if you do, call me. If you do, call a cab. If you give the options for the failure.
If the information, if you're out there drinking, don't drive when you have A, B, C, and D as an option.
Yes.
So it makes a lot of sense. You don't, and the thing, what I'm hearing you say is don't offer people a brick wall, because then, you know, people that don't have an option could do things out of desperation, out of lack of necessity as opposed to necessity, because, you know, you don't have to make the wrong choices. You don't have to make the right choices all the time. You don't have to make the wrong choices all the time.
Right.
But the fact that you have the option of knowing, okay, if I make this choice and I fail, I don't lose the support of the people that love me. And that's what we don't give people. We don't give them the option of knowing that either way it goes, I still got you.
You know, yes. It's always one of those, the pursuit of perfection. You can't always pursue perfection. And so we didn't lose any parents, and if we did, we'll have to catch them when we're teaching again, okay, because we're not going to stop teaching. So
that's right.
No joke, you know. So once you get the pink slip and, you know, you borrow the money and, you know, husband, then boyfriend, parents, anyone, you're soliciting into people buying into your dream, those that love you and they know that they believe in you. And so where do you go from there?
I go everywhere with 10,000 books in the trunk of my car.
Wait a minute. You got to back up and tell us. We don't even know when you started. Okay, so now back up. You write this book. What's the title of the book? And do you have it on hand for an excerpt?
Okay, let me back up.
Okay.
I started with my first self-published book. Now, don't laugh. I tried to skip over to the 10,000 book, which was my first full-length novel, but you making me go back and tell you my raggedy business. So I'm at the second. Okay, so my very first book was called Please Tell Me If the Grass is Greener. Now, let me tell you where I started.
Wait, it's called what?
Please Tell Me If the Grass is Greener. I printed that sucker out on 8.5 by 11 paper.
Go ahead.
I went to Staples. I bought, you know, one of them little plastic cone machines that you can put the little cone that a lot of people put.
What are they called? That's I forgot the name of that binding.
The little plastic combs. Yeah, so I had my 8.5 by 11 paper. I had that little comb binding machine.
You know what? I'm not mad at you because I'm looking at a book right now like that. Okay, it's a workbook. And you know what? I'm not mad at you. Go ahead.
And so I printed it out, you know, went to my little Kinko's or did whatever I had to do and printed off a few copies, went into beauty shops. I even remember the first lady who ever bought one. Her name was Darlene Matthews, beauty all
hey,
over hair.
Darlene.
Salon on Police Avenue back in 1998.
Shout out to her because she has no idea the seed that she planted, you know.
Yeah.
Or
yes,
they helping
me sell it in her salon. Yes, she let me sell it in her salon,
grow.
And she bought the first copy. And so, it's on another my little 8.5 by 11 paper. So when I sold all the copies I had printed, I did not go buy a pair of new shoes. What I did is I said, okay, now I'm gonna get it printed for real. You know, I'm gonna call Bookmasters up.
What?
And I'm gonna get it printed for real.
Okay,
but I still couldn't afford the four color process. So I got this little black and white book printed.
That's all right. That's all right. That's the growth.
So
that is the growth. That's like going from the 8-track to the cassette to the CD. You're telling the story.
Yeah, so I got, I want to say, about 500, 1,000 of those printed up. Hustled them suckers up. Didn't go buy me a pair of shoes with the money. I put it into four color process. So now I got Please Tell Me If the Grass is Greener. I got this nice green cover on it because I done went from 8.5 by 11, took my money, printed it off in black and white, took my money. Now I got it in color, four color process.
She know how to flip it, y'all.
Yes, I flipped that. Here's where all the begging and borrow comes in. So I done sold that little book out of the trunk of my whole car. But now, you know, Terry McMillan got her little Waiting to Exhale movie and all that. Now everybody wants these big old novels about four friend female women. And, you know, we got to ride the coattails. Now, no, you don't stay on the coattails. You watch that person. See what they're trying to do. And this is with any field. This is not just an author. When somebody is doing something that you want to do in life and they are doing it well and they are succeeding, you watch them, you study them, you follow them. You don't try to be them. You try to be better than them. As black women,
you do your own thing. You just study the craft.
Yes. Yes, and we keep raising the bar. We all stop where XYZ person is. We all going to stay idle there. We're going to stagnate. Things stagnate, don't move, stagnate, and die. So we have to be better than one another. But we run into that as sisters. We run into that as sisters because, yeah, when your sister tell you, girl, I want you to do good. I want you to work. Sometimes they do mean it. Sometimes they don't mean it. But sometimes they want you to do good. They want you to do good, just not better than them. Hello.
Come on, you got to preach. You got to preach, preacher. You know, and it's like, wow. Then they get all quiet. It's like, okay, not you. You falling off too? Yes, getting all quiet and falling off too. But you know what? Ain't nobody mad but the devil because that doesn't stop anything. We've got to keep on going because when you're living on purpose and when you know whose you are, you don't let it phase you. You do what he gave you to do. Man has neither heaven nor hell to put you in. Okay, so what you heard about him for?
Yep. So I like I said, well, I can do this. So let me write a big old book because you know my first book it was just 98 pages, collection of short stories. Then I had to write another book which was poetry. So I said, can I?
Oh, I didn't know you said poetry.
Oh, poetry is my first love. You know what?
Girl,
I still have
me too.
Yes, I have poems that I wrote in elementary school. I am that girl who kept everything she has ever written. I have a big plastic bin.
Wow.
I'm writing to date back to elementary school. Yes.
Wow, that is awesome. That is so awesome. We'll have to get you on our poetry. We have Spoken Poets Intellectualizing coming up April 22nd. And so we definitely going to have you in it. It's on our website, tribefamilychannel.com. So for our listeners, we want to thank you for listening in. You are tuned in to Tribe Family Channel's Literary Festival 2. This is your host and creator of Tribe Family Channel, Beverly Black, and I'm speaking with Joy Lynn Roth, best-selling author, telling us about her literary adventures as she embarked upon her writing career. So now you're studying the big league, if you will.
Yes, I'm studying Miss McMillan. So I put my little book out now, and it's got my four friends. Oh, they're a little bit grimier than Terry McMillan's characters, you know. Yes, it's called The Root of All Evil. And if anybody pulls it up, it's The Root of All Evil, written under Joy Lynn Jossel. So you got homegirl laying on the cover on all of this green cash because she is in love with money and whatever she has to get to it. But it's not one of them little gold-digging urban books, big booty chick on the front. With the, you know, she's mature. You know, she's been through divorce and everything. Like, look, I'm kind of up there in age. I'm an OG. I'm used to men taking care of me. I didn't work for all these years. I've been taking care of these babies. Let me get me one on a more classy level. So, you know, it's still gold digging any way you want to look at it, but, you know, I put a little class to it.
Right. She's not on dependent on a man level.
Yeah, so it was one of them, you know, urban chicklet, what we were calling it back then. Some people still call it the chicklet or women's contemporary fiction. But anywho, it was, you know, that style of book, The Root of All Evil. And so when I wrote that, I said, you know what? This self-publishing thing is some hard work, and then you got Barnes & Noble. They don't have one to look at you. You a self-published author. I needed some distribution. Who could get me into the Kmart? Who could get me into, you know, the Barnes & Noble, the Books A Million, back then the Borders? So I said, you know what? I'm going to sell this out of my trunk, but I'm also going to shop this to some publishers as well. So while somebody else thinking about it, I'm going to make me some coins off of it. So I submitted it to a publisher, and I'm selling it all over the place. And I created such a buzz that I did end up getting a book deal. But before I got the book deal, I got a rejection letter. Let me just, like I said, I don't want to make everything look all glittery and gold. I did get my rejection letter, but get this. The same company that gave me my very first rejection letter, after I hustled and grinded with them books like nobody in business, they are the same publishing company who gave me my very first book deal for the very same book they rejected in the first place.
Wow. Now, is that not how about that? You know, so in other words, the level of your grind made them change their mind, basically, okay?
Yes.
Okay?
That's what it was.
Absolutely. Now, that was my hustle day, because you know we go through a phase where you hustle, but at one point you got to grow up, you got to get rid of the jerseys, you got to get rid of the braid and the cornrows, and you got to be business. So now it's not hustle anymore. I don't hustle, I run a business. Because when you're hustling, you can't get a loan in your business name. When you're hustling, you can't get a car in your business name. But we all get that hustle mentality where we got to keep the lights on. Back then it was hustle mentality. But now I'm running a business. So I've grown so much. And that's one thing you want. You see it all the time on your social media. The authors hustling, and you go through the hustling stage. But at one point, you do have to get it, and you have to run a business. You have to run a business, and you have to look at quality and consumer first. And then sales will follow, because we're in the age where you don't have to be a salesperson anymore. There's people out there waiting to buy. All you have to do is give them the answer to what they want. You know,
and you also have to be cognizant. Go ahead. I'm sorry.
No, go right ahead. Go ahead.
I was going to say, along with what you're saying about, you know, it's not all about hustling, but you have to know how to run a business. But it's also, you know, you have to also be cognizant about promoting and marketing and looking at the long run. How are you impacting, you know, the message, the people that you are, your target audience? There's so much more to it than money. And then you really have to be consistent. I pride myself on at least being consistent. I haven't broken the mold and amassed what I am seeking to amass in terms of building my legacy, but I'm on the uprise, consistently bringing forward Gumbo for the Soul International, Gumbo for the Soul Publications, Tribe Family Channel. You know, it's about really just continuing to hit that rock, take that hammer and hit that rock and stay consistent at it. And whatever you do, just be serious about it. Hone in on that craft. Don't just look at the hustle. Don't just look at the money. Look at the business. Look at the customer service. Look at the look, feel, and the energy that your message is bringing, you know. And so you really had made them change their minds, so they give you a deal. And how sweet was the deal? Come on now.
the deal was real sweet. Now, remind you, like I said, I'm not. The message is always for the messenger first. So when I say I did hustle mode.
Uh-huh.
And when I got that book deal, I'm just going to be real. I went straight to the Cadillac dealership. I went straight to the Coach store. You know, I was hustling. When you
go ahead. Look, because you had bypassed them with all the other books. And so now it was time to drive it off the lot. And that's what you
did. That's what I told myself. But let me quickly read you this post that I just put on Facebook. Actually, last week it says, I've been in my writing literary cave preparing for God's promise. I'm learning that God won't withhold his promised blessings from me, but that I can delay them by not being prepared for them. See, I wasn't prepared for that blessing, because if I had been prepared for that blessing, I would have went into business mode instead of stayed in hustle mode. Well, let me go get this Cadillac. Let me go get this Coach bag. Then I just go hustle me up some more money. Okay, going back to my you know, I just had to take a pause there to break that down. So God won't withhold the promise, but we can delay it by not being prepared. Now, I know this from experience. Mm-hmm. The last time God did what he said he was going to do with my literary career, it occurred with the signing of my very first book contract. I went crazy, didn't know what to do with the blessing. God is not going to allow me to make the same mistake twice. He'll delay it until I'm ready before he drops it and allows me to mess it up again. Well, I'm ready. So if you're standing next to me, you might want to step aside, because things are about to start falling out of the sky, and they're called blessings, and they're coming
down. Come on now.
I love that. I love that. I know that's right. I know that's right. You know, this is really no game or no joke, and I really so truly appreciate, you know, having this candid, transparent conversation and learning about, you know, how you took it from 8.5, you know, Kinko copy to a best-selling author. And, you know, we know that you are an Essence best-selling author. So tell us about some of the awards. We know that you are one of the top 100 plus most admired African-American literary divas. Big up to you for that. In fact, my first book, Gumbo for the Soul, The Recipe for Literacy in the Black Community, is forwarded by the author of Literary Divas, Heather Covington. So shout out to Heather Covington. And Heather and I go back, you know. So tell us about how it felt. You know, we know how it felt to get that book deal and went and drove the caddy off the lot. And, you know, and now things just really, really got real. So now tell us about when the award started happening. And then before we close the show, we're going to have you read an excerpt for us. But tell us about your Essence Best-Selling Award. How did that feel?
That one was for actually, it was for Dollar Bill. That was my first joy book, my urban book, and that was with Triple Crown Publications, and it was for the book Dollar Bill. And Dollar Bill also ended up being featured in Newsweek, and it got translated in Japanese. So, it was just awesome. I ended up doing an anthology with my literary crush, Brenda Jackson. I love her, love her, love her.
Congratulations to all that. Shout out to Brenda Jackson.
Yes, and that book that we did together, it ended up winning the Borders Books best-selling African-American romance. So that was amazing. I ended up getting a book feature and upscale. Now, all of this was my secular. Then I went to church. I fell in love with Jesus Christ. I made him the head of my life, my Lord and my Savior. And then I couldn't
come
wait
on
to
now.
All the stuff I'm getting all of these awards for. I got the Literary Awards nominee for Best Erotica in 2007. So I'm getting all these awards for all this secular stuff. And then I went and I got saved. And so things shifted. I couldn't do some of the things I used to do, say some of the things I used to say.
And I remember when the shift came, I was there.
Yes.
You know, I was there. And you went from Joylynn Jostel, you know, to enjoy, basically.
Yes.
And so
I couldn't write some of the things I used to write, you know, and as authors, we try to be genuine to our readers. Readers will sniff right through you. You know, and as an author, this is my formula. I write what I know first, I research what I don't know, and I make up all the rest. And that is my formula. I'm sticking with it. I was living a different life. So I couldn't write those things anymore. So I had
no
choice.
So your spirit was conflicted.
It was very conflicted.
Okay.
It was ingenuine. No. The things I was writing was ingenuine. I knew I had to make that transition. I knew
okay,
I had
that's
to.
What I was wondering. Were you still trying to write? And then that was like, okay, so now you're saved, but your craft is over here. And so now you're on the fence trying to, you know, figure out how do you balance. And you knew that it was a tug of war. And so you had to, you know, make that transition all the way over to, you know, writing for your Lord. And so now
and
you're writing enjoy.
It was very different because, you know, I'm doing the street lit, which was booming. I'm doing the erotica, booming. So this quote by Dr. Creflo A. Dollar, this helped me to put things in perspective. He said, begin to seek the will of God and let him lead and guide your life. Forget about your career objectives and start seeking God's kingdom objectives instead. Remember, your breakthrough comes when you hear the voice and obey it. Then there will be nothing that can stop your life from moving into great success. And
come
I'm
on
bringing
now. You
that
know, I love
it's
you
right
some prep, Lord, Kathy Dollar.
You know, I love the power couple. Creflon and Taffy, you know, they're both a piece of work. I love his story about when God told him to look up because, you know, when he was showing him Taffy as his wife.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So, yeah, so like, you know, so
you
have
know,
to.
And that's man's quote, but for all y'all out there, it's okay, that's man speaking. Well, let me tell you what God said. God said in Acts 20:24, but my life is worth nothing unless I use it for doing the work assigned me by the Lord Jesus, the work of telling others the good news about God's wonderful kindness and love. And I do that in my books. When I started this, yes, I wanted to become a famous writer. I wanted to become a famous writer. I wanted to make New York Times best-selling list. But now that I know what I'm doing and who I'm doing it for and why I'm doing it,
ooh,
I do not write to become a famous author. I write to make God famous. It's not about being a best-selling author anymore. It's about being a blessed-selling author. It's not about 1 million copies sold. It's about 1 million souls saved. And it's not about selling out of books after every book signing, but making sure everybody sold out on Christ after reading every one of my books. Hello?
You know what? We don't have nothing else to say to that. We can just stamp that. Now, we're coming to the close of our show, and so where can our listeners find you? And then we're going to have you read an excerpt. Well, first read an excerpt, and then we'll, you know, have you tell our listeners where they can find you.
Okay, well, I'm going to read an excerpt from my latest book, which just came out a couple of weeks ago, and it's called One Sunday at a Time, and it's one of my Divas installments. I have the New Day Divas, like you mentioned before, the Still Divas, Always Divas, Forever Divas, all have been coined soap operas in print because they are just addictive. They're like soap operas and reality shows combined in a book. So I'm going to read from One Sunday at a Time, and this is the prologue, and this is dealing with the character of Deborah. Okay.
Uh-huh.
You can't leave me, Deborah yelled out at Lennox, spittle flying from her mouth. She looked like a mad woman. She felt like a mad woman. Her hair was in a disarray and perspiration beaded up on her forehead. It was no wonder she didn't have foam caked up in the corners of her mouth. She was acting rabid, like the victim in a science fiction horror movie that had failed to explain that was testing all of Earth. She needed help. That was no longer the million-dollar question. The question now was, why hadn't she gotten the help she so desperately needed? Or rather, why hadn't she continued getting the help she'd once been receiving? For a minute there, she felt that she'd been doing pretty well and didn't need any help. There had always been the possibility that she fell back into her slump again. She could just pick up where she left off in her treatment. Not only had some of her old traits reared their ugly heads, but she was far worse off now than ever before. What had started off as a manageable snowball was now an avalanche, and if her husband didn't get out of the way, he'd be buried alive underneath it. I can leave you. I am leaving you, and I'm taking the kids with me, was Lennox's reply to his wife's command. So now, not only was Deborah's husband leaving her, but he was taking their two sons with him? The rage that welled up in Deborah's being was uncontrollable. That didn't come as any surprise. She'd lost jurisdiction over her emotions a long time ago. At first, when her life seemed to start getting hectic, she somewhat managed. She hid the darkness under an invisible flashlight. Outsiders couldn't see the darkness or the object projecting the false lighting. But then emotionally, it felt as if one thing was piling on top of the other, anger issues, depression, anxiety, the need to be in control, compulsion for order. There were times, after researching the term, that she even thought she might be bipolar. Maybe she was experiencing a little bit of all of them, which was a recipe for disaster. With her husband standing in front of her with a suitcase in hand threatening to leave her, looked like the recipe had been, and now the timer on the oven had sounded. It was done, over, finished, kaput. Why are you doing this? Deborah cried out. Why are you hurting me? Deborah stood blocking the closed bedroom door. She'd already told Lennox that he was leaving over her dead body. those hadn't just been desperate words being flung out of her mouth. She meant it. I was hurting you when I was pampering and pacifying your actions instead of making you go do something about it, Lennox told her. So now what? Deborah raised her arms and then allowed them to fall to her side. You called this helping me? Lennox shook his head. No, I call this giving you the opportunity to help yourself. Lennox slowly walked toward his wife. It pained him so much to see her like this. He didn't understand how a person's emotions and behavior could shift so erratically. Why was it that he and Deborah could have experienced the best night in the world, but then Deborah would wake up mad at the world? Or how one little thing throwing her off schedule or being out of order could send her on a rampage? Although Deborah loved her job as a literary agent and editor, it was hard for Lennox to tell sometimes. Getting steady, good-paying projects was every freelance editor's dream. But as an agent, sometimes Deborah could get overwhelmed with submissions or needy authors. So when all her projects collided and piled on top of one another, she often operated in fear of not getting what she already had on her plate done before another healthy portion was served up. When Deborah was working on one project, her mind would already be on the next and the one after that. God forbid Lennox or the children need her to do something for them. She'd bite their heads off just for asking. For Deborah, there were instances when she felt pangs of guilt for feeling as though she put her job before her family. She'd be regretful, which would make her feel less than a good wife and mother, sending her into a bout of depression. Everything about her life was like a double-edged sword, and now she was cutting up. Lennox had already received one wound too many. It was time for him to go, but Deborah wasn't going to allow that without putting up a fight. I promise I'll be better, Deborah pleaded, looking into her man's eyes. I'll do whatever you want me to do. Deborah bounced up and down like a child begging for her parent to buy her something from the ice cream truck. Lennox rested his hand on Deborah's shoulders. The gesture was to both comfort her and to make her stop bouncing. He could see that his leaving was eating her up. He was afraid. He really didn't know what his wife would do after he walked out of that door. But he was more afraid of what might happen if he didn't. And that
girl,
one Sunday
Wait, that is some good stuff right there. I want to thank you so much. That is why you are the best-selling author that you are. Joy Lynn Ross, live on Tribe Family Channels, Literary Festival 2, Love, Lust, Lovers, Late Night Literature, going strong all spring long. I want to thank you so much. That was pure fire. Now, where can people find you online, and where can they pick up their own copy?
Now, people can find me online at my website, which is www.enjoywrites@aol.com. That's www.enjoywrites.com. And I'm on Facebook, Author Ian Joy. I'm on Twitter at Ian Joy Writes. I'm on Pinterest at Author Ian Joy. Instagram, bestselling_author_ENJOY, and I'm on Periscope, author_E_ENJOY. But I don't know how to do Periscope yet, but I got that account.
But they can dango shall get in touch with you. And for all things Tribe Family Channel, go to tribefamilychannel.com. I am the creator of Tribe Family Channel, Beverly Black. My parent company, Gumbo for the Soul International, is gumbofortheSoul.com. You can find our calls for submissions, our memoirs, imprint. If you have something that you're looking to be published, hit us up. We have some calls for submissions under health and wellness, under poetry, and under our honors series. So, and you can find me on Facebook, Beverly Black, or at Gumbo for the Soul, and also at Tribe Family US on Twitter, or at GumboForTheSoul.com on Twitter for my own page. Joy Lynn, thank you so very much. We're going to go out with Love's Holiday, Rain in Paradise, Mr. Maurice White, and thank you for lending us your voice and your talent. And Joy Lynn, I want to thank you once again for such a very candid and transparent hour with you on Tribe Family Channel, and you take care, all right?
Thank you. Thank you again for having me.
It's my absolute pleasure, and I want to also thank you for being the sponsor of tonight's show. And definitely, listeners, please definitely connect with Joy Lynn on her social media sites and pick up a copy of that Fire book that she's reading from. And what's the title of the book again, Joy Lynn?
One Sunday at a Time.
One Sunday at a Time. And that is part of your New Day Diva series?
Yes, yes.
All right, all right. All right, well, thank you so much once again. And ladies and gentlemen, be sure to tune into our brother and sister stations. You can find us at tribefamilychannel.com. We have David Glover coming up Wednesday. We have Patrice Chocolate Banks coming up on Friday. We have Incarcerated Lives Matter coming up on next Sunday. And then we'll have The Woman at the Well, myself, as well as Voices of Wisdom coming up later in the month. So be sure to visit tribefamilychannel.com for more of our upcoming broadcast. And have a very blessed evening. Thanks, Joy Lynn.
You're welcome. Good night.
God bless.
If I touched, if I kissed, if I held you tight.